Palliative care is specialized medical care focused on providing relief from symptoms and stress for people with a serious illness. In the United States, it's mainly identified with hospice. However, while all hospice care may be palliative, not all palliative care is hospice. We'll talk about this distinction, how palliative care works, and how such programs are being more widely incorporated in more traditional settings, just ahead on Media Meet. Hello and welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guests are hospice and palliative care specialist Dr. Michael Grossman and Upper Peninsula Home Health and Hospice Executive Director Sharon Fries. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
A little background on our guests. First, Dr. Grossman, I've read you became involved with hospice philosophical care in 1981 and have been the chief medical director of UP Hospice since 1993. You're board certified in family medicine, hospice, and palliative medicine.
Right.
And also practice at the Twin Cities Medical Clinic in Negaunee, I understand. How did you embark on a medical career, and what pointed you in the direction of hospice and palliative medicine?
Okay, well, primarily I'm a family doctor.
Okay.
And so I came up here in 1980 after doing my residency downstate. Very anxious to get into family medicine. I did deliveries, took care of children, and adults. I still do take care of children and adults. But really, I got a call about 1 year after I was here from Cindy Nyquist, who was then one of the, he was running, I think, the second oldest hospice in the United States.
That's true.
At that time, she was working for Lake,
first three,
she started Lake Superior Hospice, mm-hmm. and then she started UP Home Health and Hospice. But I got a call from her, and I was already interested, because in my residency, I had seen Kubler-Ross talk, who wrote a book about, you know, death and dying. And I just understood it to be part of the process, you know, birth to death, family practice.
Yeah.
So she asked if I'd become involved with her hospice, and she called during a snowstorm, and she wanted me to come down for a meeting. I said, well, I'm interested, but I'm not coming down tonight. I mean, I just got here, and this was a real snowstorm. So she said she was happy with that. And I got to be involved with her, with the hospice, with going to what's called IDT meetings, where we discuss all the patients, recommend care. And I just got very involved with it at that time, and I've been a hospice director most of the time in over the last 36 years for one of the other hospices.
Okay. What do we mean when we say, the term was hospice philosophical care? Does that have some special meaning, or is that just...
To me, it means just what you were talking about,
okay.
Palliative care.
Okay.
Helping people with their symptoms, helping their lives to be better, improving the quality of their lives, as opposed to just diagnosing a disease and treating it by the books.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've read they're virtually identified in America, hospice and palliative care, but palliative care has a broader context. Is that correct?
Right. Palliative care basically means dealing with troublesome symptoms, usually in people with life-limiting or chronic diseases.
I see.
Whereas hospice is doing the same thing, as you said earlier, all hospice is palliative care,
mm-hmm.
but we don't take patients into hospice unless they have a 6 month or less prognosis to live.
Okay.
Sometimes they'll live much longer, oftentimes they may live much less. But palliative care could be started at any stage.
Okay.
When someone's having discomfort, whether it be from pain, whether it be for a financial loss, depression, they need palliative care.
Mm-hmm.
Not just quote-unquote curative care.
I've heard that referred to as total suffering. Is that a good way to look at it?
Yeah, well, total suffering has to do with the type of pain.
Oh, I see.
So
okay.
There's physical pain, which we generally think of as very important in mm-hmm. hospice and palliative care. Just recently, I had a patient who I may talk about a little bit more later, but he had a respiratory illness, mm-hmm. and his pain was from shortness of breath.
Okay.
He was very, very short of breath and needed some relief of suffering from that. But then there's social suffering, maybe relationships between one's loved ones, spiritual suffering, guilty about, you know, your relationship with God. So there's many other types.
People just worried about the future of their family, I suppose.
Future of their family, yeah. And then they have existential suffering. Is what is life all about? And it's pretty heavy, but yeah. We have to deal with that, not just in hospice, but in all our patients that are suffering.
Okay. Sharon, you're a nursing graduate of Northern Michigan University and a registered nurse with over 30 years' experience in home health and hospice. In fact, you happen to be a prior owner of a home health company. Is that correct?
Yes, Cindy and I actually agency. Were partners
okay.
for a period of time.
How did this come to be your calling?
Well, actually, when I graduated from Northern with my bachelor's in nursing, I started working at the hospital here. And I had been on the medical unit, and Cindy Nyquist at that time was working with a family on the unit. And so I got exposed to what she was doing out in the community, and she at that time had asked me if I was interested in getting involved. And to be honest, at that time I was a little bit leery. It was more non-traditional doing that type of care.
Especially at that
and,
time.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I needed, you know, had to have an income coming in. So I started off doing it on a part-time basis with her. And after about 6 months, to a year, she convinced me that there were a lot of opportunities. So we've been together ever since. I've actually worked with Cindy for 37 years in home health and hospice. It's been very rewarding.
We should mention that, as Dr. Grossman pointed out, Cindy was the founder of UP Home Health and Hospice and was one of the very first in the country in 1973. She was directly influenced through correspondence, I understand, with British hospice activist Cicely Saunders.
Right.
And can you tell us briefly about current operations and services, including private duty?
Here we service Marquette County. We have home health, we have hospice, and we have private duty.
Okay.
I can start off briefly talking about the private duty program.
Sure.
That's private pay, and individuals we'll call and set that up. There's no need for a physician to be involved. And it's an integral part of care in the community. Sometimes someone may only need a few hours a day to be able to stay home instead of either having to live with a family member or go to a nursing home. So the cost for something like that is much less than having to go to a nursing home if that's what they need. The level of care that the caregiver, the private caregiver can provide can be anything from laundry to cleaning, transportation, meals, assisting with medication, so pretty much directed by the family. And the private duty program is an integral part of our hospice and our home health programs.
Okay.
Home health is a service that is directed by the doctor. It is generally covered by insurance, and it has some limitations as to what is and is not paid for. The services provided under the home health program are an extension of the doctor. That would include nursing services, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech, a personal care aide, social work.
Wow.
So when someone often is leaving a hospital or a nursing home or they need additional care in the home, maybe a new diagnosis, maybe they're now a newly diagnosed diabetic and they need insulin at home, then a nurse could go out and work with them to administer their insulin. That would be all covered. And so that's some of the services that would be provided under that program.
Okay.
So pretty much intermittent. They come in, they provide a visit, which could be 45 minutes in length, and then they leave. So most of the time, our patients in home health go back to independent living, getting community services, and our services would end.
All right. The need for hospice, which I'm sure would be your next topic here, is generally tied to end-of-life measures to relieve pain and stress. They refer to it as palliation without curative intent. Is that correct?
That would probably be correct.
And it engages the entire family, which is something very interesting here. It takes more than a physician to do this. Generally takes a team. What are the principles?
Yeah, well, it does take, it's not cured by just one physician.
Yeah.
Generally, there's at least two physicians involved. The primary physician. One of the myths about hospice is, well, I might think about going into hospice, but I don't want to lose my doctor. Well, you don't lose your doctor. That doctor is still your primary doctor. Mm-hmm. If you want to see him, you can go to his office. If he'll make a house call, he could do that. So he is still running the program for the patient, the medications and that. But then there is a medical director, such as myself, and I go to meetings at least every 2 weeks about a certain patient, or maybe take phone calls, and I might have recommendations, which the primary physician can take or not take. If we don't agree, I could call them. That almost never happens. They almost always, you know, if we have recommendations, the primary doctor almost always takes them.
Okay.
But if he says no, I'll just honor that. I don't have to call him, mm-hmm. unless I really disagree with him, but that hardly ever happens. So you have at least two physicians involved. You have the primary nurse, who is an RN. You might have an LPN that goes out to the house as well. Have Sharon help me, but there's aides that help with bathing and activities of daily living. We have a minister or a chaplain who's available if they don't have their own and they want chaplain services. Social worker is very important with, you know, financial problems or any other type of counseling that might come out. The social worker, she's not a counselor, but certainly if they have those concerns, they help with that. Volunteer is extremely important. These are people, they don't get paid. Out of the goodness of their heart, they become trained, and they'll go into the home and help take care of the patient so maybe a family member can get out and go do some shopping or just have a night, you know, a few hours of relaxation.
Okay.
So that's some of the, there's probably more.
That's pretty much the only
other
thing.
That's the main elements.
You provide, this is something that I was reminded of in what you were saying, what's called respite care.
That's another program. Respite care would be when you're in hospice, you usually have a primary care provider, which is usually a spouse or mm-hmm. a child. And they usually live with the patient, and they're the primary one to help with their care and to coordinate the services with hospice. But sometimes they just need a break. It's very hard work. So they'll say, you know, I just need 3 or 4 days off. Well, we provide a respite service where they can go sometimes to a hospital or sometimes to a local nursing home for 3 or 4 days and be taken care of there, so the loved one gets a little break.
I see.
Yeah.
A multidisciplinary team is also a defining element of some palliative care programs. It's meant to be appropriate at any age and at any stage in a serious illness, so the goals of the treatment are not limited to end-of-life care in this case.
Right.
And the specialty itself is fairly new. The U.S. board certification only dates to about 2006, described in what I read as a subspecialty of internal medicine. Why was it so long to get certification, or would you have expected certification, something like that?
I think just the need for palliative care is just being recognized over the past 20 or 30 years. And then we realized that we had a lot of work to do, a lot of understanding, a lot of studies to do mm-hmm. to best care for patients in a palliative manner. And out of that came a palliative care board that would help certify doctors to do that. And now if you want to be a palliative care specialist, I'm a specialist because I've been in it for so long, and then I had to take examinations,
sure.
that type of thing. But now someone newer coming out of the med school would have to go through a full 3 or 4 year residency program. And they'd be primarily a palliative care physician that either works at a hospital or a hospice.
Wow. That's a long way from Detroit Receiving Hospital offering palliative care consult service in 1985. Go ahead.
Talk about this a little bit more.
Yeah, go ahead.
Good palliative care is not intuitive, believe it or not, and good hospice care. It really takes training. And if I hadn't been trained in many things, I'd be making a lot of mistakes. And I still make a lot of mistakes. I'm not saying I don't. But to be a good caregiver for a hospice or a patient not in hospice, just someone that needs palliative care, you have to learn how to do the proper type of communication, and that takes training. You have to learn what some good things to say, maybe some not so good things to say, because words do matter a lot, especially in palliative care. You have to be a good communicator. These skills have not been taught in medical school traditionally. I think they are starting to now, but it's important to get that training. And, of course, a palliative care specialist has that training. And myself, I try to train my colleagues as well.
Well, you attend a lot of conferences. And
yes, right. But I also try to, you know, sometimes my colleagues will talk to me, what about this, Mike? What about that? It doesn't have to be a formal consult.
I see.
But I can just, you know, give recommendations.
Okay. We're talking about palliative care in hospice with hospice and palliative care specialist Dr. Michael Grossman and Upper Peninsula Home Health and Hospice Executive Director Sharon Fries. Studies by the New England Journal of Medicine, among others, seem to show better results in patient outcomes, even for life-threatening conditions with palliative care. Cancer patients survive longer.
Right.
Depression is reduced. Patients report a better quality of life. That all square with your experience?
Yes, very much. A landmark study that you're talking about had to do with patients with lung cancer. And they started them out right away with good palliative care, as well as aggressive care, chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. But what they found in the group that took that care as opposed to just chemotherapy, you know, until the very end, this group actually stopped their chemo sooner, but they lived longer. And like you said it well, there was less depression, better quality of life. Mm-hmm. So you can't have both to a certain point. But when things get really towards the end, we encourage patients to consider hospice.
I see.
But you can start palliative care earlier. Absolutely.
And I think, too, we've had some patients who have been in our program, hospice program, who have come out because they actually have either improved with a change in the direction of care to more palliative or stabilized. And so
palliative care has saved their lives.
Very.
I'm not saying it happens every time, but I'll show you an interesting statistic. First of all, it used to be that most patients in hospice had cancer. That's not true anymore. About 40% of the patients in hospice have cancer, and 60% have other chronic illnesses such as dementia, heart disease, or emphysema. And when patients with non-cancer diagnosis come into hospice, they actually have about a 15% chance of being discharged alive 6 months to a year later. Some of them actually get better. And it's just that they get actually, people think they get less care in hospice or palliative care, but they don't. It's a different type of care. They get more care, not just by doctors, but by the nurses, you know, maybe pastoral care, just a lot of care. There's a lot of caring done.
Do medicine and drug protocols change under palliative programs in hospice?
I know they do
in hospice.
Yeah. Oh, yes. They do, but it's not immediate.
Okay.
The worst thing you can do is come and say, oh, I'm a palliative care doctor, and you're on 15 meds, which is absolutely true in many cases, but we don't come in and say, we're going to stop half of them. You don't need them. Especially, I might say that with my own patient who knows me and trusts me, but for a guy just coming into a new case, you don't want to do that.
Okay.
You might want to say, well, you know,
is there a case where a medication that might be used for one purpose in one context is actually changed to serve another purpose that seems to be obvious in the hospice situation?
You mean the same medicine?
Yeah.
It's possible, I suppose.
Okay.
But there are
That's
medicines.
That's not a common thing, though.
There are medicines that are indicated, for example, for heart failure.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time they get into a hospice or palliative care situation, these meds are, they might statistically show that they make the patient live longer, but they're making the patient feel miserable when they get to a certain. So we generally stop them.
Yeah.
Not all at once, maybe one at a time, or cut the dose down. And people start feeling better, often. It's not a guarantee.
Right. There's not only patient anxiety on various matters, some non-medical, but also family anxiety, pressure, and fatigue. How are these addressed? I've heard of various things, even palliative pets.
Actually, one of our volunteers does do pet therapy, so I think each family and each patient, it's individualized because what's important to them and what they're going to need is going to vary. We have a massage program where we have massage therapists from the community come out and work with the patients in their homes. We have, through our foundation, we have a Make a Memory program where special things can be done that are going to ease some of that for the family.
I see.
This can vary greatly by what they really need and what makes them comfortable. The volunteers themselves can give that family comfort to know that they can go out on their own and maybe to dinner with their spouse, and the volunteer can be there with their loved one. As life changes and your desires are different, those things, those smaller things, are more important, and those are the things that we try to provide them the opportunity to do.
I see. While hospice programs far outnumber other palliative care programs, when not conjoined, there are really some practical differences here. One is timing, obviously, where someone has a terminal illness, for example. Can the approach be open-ended to some degree, or are you pretty much stuck with a timetable?
In palliative care?
Mm-hmm.
No, in palliative care, it's generally helped to ease suffering and make life better for the patient. So if a patient's suffering, you should consider palliative care.
Mm-hmm.
The question, though, is there a program for them? And currently, at least here, in some areas of the country there are, we don't really have an outpatient program of just palliative care. But physicians certainly can practice palliative care. They have a home health, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I know many of my patients that are in home health, they're not in hospice, they're not expected to die in the next 6 months or a year, but I certainly treat them with palliative care and might get consultations from other services, nursing, pastoral, psychological, whatever is going to help their suffering. Now, I will say this, in the hospital, and we were talking about this earlier, in most larger hospitals, there is a palliative care consult service. So that if patients are suffering and the attending physician says, well, I'm working on this patient's bad lung disease, but they seem to be suffering, the family has a lot of questions, it's more than I can handle, they can get a palliative care consult. They'll look at the medications, they'll talk to the family. It's very time consuming. And it's not easy to form one of those programs. Currently, right now, we don't have any here. Marquette General, for a short time, did have a pretty good one. And I can't speak to why, partly economical reasons, it was stopped. I think that LifePoint does want to start one at Marquette General. I wouldn't be surprised in the next year or two if they do have one.
I see. Yeah. Another difference is location. Most hospice takes place in the home, over 80%, I've read.
Mm-hmm.
Palliative systems are often administered in hospitals.
That's what I was saying. So most large hospitals do have a palliative care service. It's a consultative service, so if you need some advice, if this patient seems to be suffering unduly, you're having trouble with the pain medications, side effects, or whatever, they'll get a palliative care consult. And that's working well in a lot of the U.S. Yeah.
The source of a lot of discussion is the big difference related to eligibility for services and payment. The Medicare hospice benefit sets the terms of eligibility for most hospice clients.
Right.
And provides a per diem rate of $126 a day to cover expenses per diem. One must generally be terminal or within 6 months of death to be eligible for most hospice programs or to receive hospice benefits from your insurance. I guess the question here is palliative care covered under regular medical insurance? As a distinction from
not like hospice. No. So if you're going to go in and do palliative care, you'll have to bill for the services you provide. So if they have lung disease, you can bill on that, or if they have heart disease, mm-hmm. you can bill on that and still do palliative type medicine. But there's nowhere from insurances that you can just do palliative care, especially as an outpatient.
Okay.
Sharon might know more about
that. Sharon.
Because we've looked into starting an outpatient service, and we still are looking into that.
Yeah, presently, the insurance companies, the federal government, aren't viewing reimbursement for palliative care in the way they do hospice. So all the things we're talking about that would be important in palliative care, social work and spiritual support, that's the programs. We don't have the programs in the UP that fund that.
That could get pretty expensive. How would a patient go about controlling costs out of pocket on something like that? They just have to do a lot of homework?
I think that's probably the key. I mean, in recognizing where that falls with deductibles and co-pays and all those components. But as Dr. Grossman referenced, presently, if it's done, it may be done in a hospital setting, and that's already blanketed into your inpatient stay.
Okay. Yeah.
But if you're going to be accessing these services on an outpatient basis, there still are some services in the community that you might be able to tap in to that have no fees.
Okay.
And that's, I guess I would be asking someone that's providing community services what's out there, because there are your senior centers and different services that have social workers, churches, of course, for spirituality. The unfortunate thing is someone would have to go out and seek and find those components. But if they're in home health, and Dr. Grossman referenced that, we provide services to patients in palliative care, they should be able to provide most of those services under the home health benefit.
Okay. The Affordable Care Act sought to expand palliative care, but apparently didn't get very far with it. Medicare is the primary source, I understand, for hospice.
For hospice, yeah.
And it might be included in some sort of Medicare program or Medicaid program. From your experience now, what outcomes for hospice and palliative care programs would you like to see if and when changes are made to the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, well, it would be nice to have some type of a palliative care system like the hospice system, which is not perfect, but something that would be standardized, and that if your agency qualifies, then you could perform palliative care to patients that aren't in hospice and still get a reasonable reimbursement. We talked about this earlier too, and one thing that has changed is in the last few years now, physicians can talk to patients about end-of-life issues and bill for that, you know.
Right.
But it's not a lot of money, and it's a lot of time.
Yeah, and it was a lot of trouble even getting to that point.
Yeah, and that was just recent, very recent, yeah.
Do you see any changes forthcoming in palliative care? There are about 1,400 programs in the country right now. They're real systems. 80% of hospitals with over 300 beds have a program. Mm-hmm. 55% of hospitals with more than 100 beds. Do you see that number growing larger?
Yes, I think that will definitely. It's a great need in the hospital. And some patients come out of a hospital, and if it wasn't for home health, they'd really be in trouble because, you know, they get treated for, you know, and you can only stay in the hospital now unless you're really deathly ill for a couple of days.
Sure.
So you're in and out, and you're still not feeling very good. I mean, who's going to take care of me?
Yeah.
And what are my goals? And these things, it's good that there are some hospitals that have palliative care now. Like you say, most large hospitals do.
I wonder, too, with our the aging population, I think palliative care is going to be key. And what would really be nice if the direction of palliative care would be there is if once they're out of acute care in the hospital that they might be able to transition into a palliative care service like rehab, maybe for 2 or 3 days, because I can't imagine they're going to be able to meet all these needs in the short hospital stays.
Right.
So
right.
I would
Someone's
envision...
Someone's got to watch them at home.
Yeah, so the idea might be like a... You know, if I were to look at what would be great to see, it would be that transition from acute care to maybe a palliative care program like a rehab unit and then into the home, back into the home with home health services, because it would give a lot more care to those people, get them connected with what they need. And I think our goal in healthcare is to keep them out of the emergency room unnecessarily. What I see with people that are in palliative care and not in hospice. They come back in.
Okay.
To the
I'm
ER.
Afraid we have to leave it there for time. I'm sorry. We've been talking about hospice and palliative care with the hospice and palliative care specialist, Dr. Michael Grossman, and Upper Peninsula Home Health and Hospice Executive Director, Sharon Fries. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on Media Meet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.